I'm excited because it's yet another exciting and lovely episode of Guitar Talk with John and Jamie. This is John.
This is Jamie.
And we were able to rhythmically sync in our way of saying that. An extraordinary opening yet again. Mm-hmm. And we are two friends, two pals, two camaraderic, no, camaraderic, is that real? Two comrades in arms, two comrades in arms in the universe of guitar playing. We have been friends for some 20 years now, more, and we are really talking about guitar. That's it, all things guitar. And Jamie brought up a really interesting thing that I wanted to see if we could explore that we both want to look at. And it's this idea that falls in line, again, with this whole conversation thing about phrasing. How does one construct? And we're talking about, I'm assuming also by phrasing, we mean improvisation because.
Well, yeah, but more specifically, you know, I was giving a lesson recently to somebody and I run into this a lot with students, especially when they get to a certain point in their development where they learn a few things. It's like, okay, they know a major scale. They know this scale. They know that. So they understand the idea of, you know, like arpeggiating, you know, chords and. You know, and even playing over some simple changes and, you know, outlining the chords with chord tones. They, all the basics of improvisation, you know, okay. They understand a lot of that stuff. But the thing where you every single time you run into, you get up to this point and then you kind of butt your head into this wall of, because you listen to the play and they just don't have a real clear idea on how to put these things together in a way that's compelling. And, you know, and then I recently had a student say, well, can you teach me how to phrase, you know, how, and it's like, well, you know, frankly, no. I mean, maybe I'm just not that good of a teacher, you know.
I think it's a great question. I mean, but would you have somebody ask you that if you're teaching them a language, you know, and somebody said to you, like, when you're learning to speak a language, when you're a child, there's an inherent immersion factor, which is not happening with kids now. They're not immersing themselves in the language of playing.
Right.
Which is actually a differential, which makes it harder to teach. But you can't teach someone to phrase, but you can point them in the direction of
exactly
of the you things know. That work.
And a lot of, you know, some of the, and I'm trying to think of like, well, you know, how, one of the challenges of like giving, you know, and I'm sure anyone that's listening who's ever taught a guitar lesson, you know, you run into certain things because, you know, you could have stuff that you play every day, but then when you have to actually like teach it to someone in a way, and reduce it down to a language that they can understand and digest and sort of apply.
That's the hard part of playing.
Yeah, it becomes, it's like, wow, okay. Then, you know, typically you, as the instructor, start, you know, you learn things a lot better and you have a better understanding of them. But teaching phrasing is one of those things that's, because I'm of the opinion that you can't, you know, everyone has their own inherent, inborn sense of rhythm. Be it good or bad, mm-hmm. everyone's concept of time and interpretation of rhythm is different and unique. That's kind of what sets us apart as individual players. Mm-hmm. Is your, you know, like I don't phrase anything like you. You don't phrase anything like me. I don't phrase anything like I have my favorite players. I can try and emulate their approach, but it's never going to sound exactly like them. And frankly,
but we still converse when we play. We have a duo. Jamie and I have a duo. We've had one. And when we play, we converse. We are able to converse with each other.
But yeah, but it's not about not being able to not communicate. It's about sounding like yourself.
That's true.
And that's what I think that, you know, so everyone has their own voice.
I agree with
whether
that.
Or not they found it or not. And the tricky part is how to get someone to find, is to help someone to find that voice. And that's, as being like, I don't teach a lot. I teach a little bit at MI. I give a few private lessons here and there. But that's always been the hardest part for me because it's like, well, that's just up to you to do. You know, you got to play a lot. You got to practice a lot. You have to sit with the instrument in your hand. And, you know, here's the basic tools. Now go build the house. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now I have a radical thought because we have been guitar talk for these last 10 episodes or so. I think there's this moment where we've reached where there's like a fourth wall breakage that needs to occur where we could pick up a guitar, one of us, and I'm hinting and pointing at you as I say this, and we could kind of make a little demonstration of what we're talking about, the difference between non-phrasing and phrasing and how differentials occur between two players and what we're kind of looking at and talking about. And I don't know, maybe it's just me, but we could have reached a point in this show where one of us or both of us could actually pick up a guitar. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, being that neither one of us actually play guitar, that might not be enjoyable for the listeners.
Yes, we have been fooling you guys for all this time. We are actually not John and Jamie. We are Facebook.
We're Jeff and Jerry.
Jeff and Jerry, Facebook wannabes. And we are now, for the first time, on Guitar Talk, actually going to play something. So Jamie, let's look at something. Let's say we were in a lesson together, and I know nothing about phrasing, and we were talking. And we were looking at like a basic chord that someone would like. A lot of guys play blues or dominant seventh chords. Let's look at a dominant seventh chord and talk about phrasing.
Right. Okay. So A dominant seven.
Okay.
One of the things that was the most, at least my understanding of kind of Blue, the Miles Davis album, that was kind of this watershed moment in...
Two chords were just played, A7, which is the root, flat 7th, 3rd, 5th, and root, and then he played the 13th.
Really? You're cutting me off for that?
No, I just wanted to throw it because it's...
All right.
Sorry.
I was in the middle of a thought that you made...
You were going Miles Davis.
Oh, right. Miles Davis. Okay, Kind of Blue, big landmark album. My understanding of the way that that album was recorded is... There was just basic frameworks of songs. They didn't even really have, Miles didn't even really have melodies written out. They were just some harmonic frameworks, some harmonic skeletons of the songs. And then he presented the players, modes to play on each chord. Like here's a song on, like on Flamenco Sketches. On this chord, only use this.
Really? Play. Blue and Green wasn't written out or...
I don't think so.
Really?
My understanding of it is it wasn't. Those,
wow.
The melodies that you hear were kind of basically just improvised melodies.
Wow.
And then they improvised over the forms.
Wow.
And using like a preset written set of modes for each chord. Like,
okay.
Only use this, only use that. So operating within that, it's like when you're teaching somebody, who's just kind of getting into the basics of soloing or playing or improvising on any given chord or set of chords, you might tell them, okay, well, minor seven chord, like D minor seven, real basic D minor seven chord. It's like, okay, well, what do I play on this? It's like, well, there's a lot of things you can play, but you might start with, say, a Dorian, Dorian mode. Okay, so you can, that's great. And then you get the students that like, okay, do you know a Dorian mode? Yeah, I know a Dorian mode. And they play it. Okay, all right, I threw a leading tone in.
All right. But I like C-sharp, just so you know. And just as a friend, I've known Jamie a really long time. One of Jamie's favorite notes on minor chords is the natural sixth. And we've actually joked many, many times when we were playing together that if you play the natural sixth and end on that, that I will something will happen. I'm not sure what will happen, but almost it's an invariable inside joke between Jamie and I that he likes that particular note.
I do like the natural sixth, but actually my favorite note is the major seven.
Okay.
I love that note.
Okay.
So,
phrasing.
So, okay, you know a Dorian mode, you know a Dorian scale. So now, what do I do with it? How do I make that work? And it's like, well, and that's, as an instructor, that's a part where I'm like, well, try constructing little phrases. I try and tell people, play little bite-sized pieces of a melody.
Do you ever do the thing where you're like saying like, it's like I do the thing where I say, imagine you're talking to me and you're speaking to me in short sentences, and I'll actually say a sentence. I'll say something like, I'd really like to learn to play, and then I'll play a melody that goes da 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 do da da.
Yeah.
And then I'll actually use that so that there's a pause at the end of the actual thing.
Yeah. That's a great idea, because the whole idea is to play in phrases and to play in, so you're
let's define
forming
phrases. Define
sentences
that?
or having a conversation.
Can you define, actually, this is a good thing, because we haven't actually said it. What do we actually think phrasing is? What do we think phrases are?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a loose term, isn't it? If you want to get real technical, and you're talking in terms of, don't you have a motif?
Yes.
And then two motifs, it forms a period, and then two periods forms a phrase, isn't it?
I've always thought of phrasing as being coherent sequencing in such a way that there's a logical sense for where I've come from and where I'm going to. that something has been said that you that connects from one point to the next.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, and that, okay, that's a great sentence, because, you know, what do I play on this? It's like, well, it depends on where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And where you're going.
Exactly. I play blues on everything. I do. Yeah. I mean, essentially, even if it's like a major scale, I'll play a blues lick. I mean, with using the organ. I mean, I don't really think in modes. I play almost mostly by ear. I know the modes. I know the scales that go with it. But once I actually start playing or improvising, I try and. Squeaky. Yeah. I try and rely on my ears, but I'm looking for a story, and my reference point is the blues. That's my reference point.
Well, again, you know, I mean, we've kind of gone off on a tangent, but it's...
Well, let's go A7th. You were going to do a thing with A7th.
Okay, A7.
Let's take a really simple phrase that you can develop into something.
Okay. And a really simple phrase based off of a source scale of some kind.
Organizational pattern. How about a major scale with a flatted seventh, which we can call mixolydian?
Okay.
Yeah, but that flatted seventh is my favorite note.
And the arpeggio, only the chord tones.
Okay.
Okay, so a lot of times I'll tell people, just try playing on the top three strings.
Okay.
You know, like, limit yourself. You kind of have to set up, boundaries and parameters to operate within. Otherwise, it's system overload. You know, you have, using only chord tones on the top three strings in one position, for example. So there's the chord, and you have, there's on the top three strings, I have these notes available. So like a beginning improvisation student will play something that, and I always notice like right away, the thing that's like, they have the notes, but they don't have the rhythm.
Okay.
And that's the thing that, to me, it's like phrasing is all about rhythm.
Okay.
I think it's, you know, you
where have, the note occurs.
Yeah. And how it's placed and how you're playing it against the beat. There's very, and guitar players, it seems to me, just based on my observations, that guitar players really are guilty of, they don't really think in terms of rhythm.
Okay.
They don't think of that stuff. They're thinking in terms of like, what scales can I play? How fast can I play this scale?
Right.
How fast can I sweep pick this?
And right.
They're not thinking in terms of like where the groove is, where the tempo is, where
so
the pocket
play,
is.
Play a simple phrase for me and show me how you would develop it. Like, okay. First, where's time? Show me time.
Okay, so say that the time is...
1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, quarter notes are there, like 1:20.
So say that's our thing right there. Okay, simple, right?
Yeah. So you answered yourself. In other words, you actually made a statement and answered yourself.
Yeah. And that's kind of the idea. It's classic blues, right?
Right.
Call and response. And again, it's really using only those notes on the top three strings.
Okay.
You know, chord tones, I'm arpeggiating. So, you know, I can go 1, 2, 3. Okay, and I threw in a sixth, and I...
So you had a motivic development that was sort of developing, and then you ended it.
Yeah, very simple. You know, it's like I only have, like, you know, four notes available to me.
And you're playing eighth notes. But also straight.
And you don't
notes.
Always have to do that. You know, you can vary it up. Now I can take that same sort of thing and maybe, you know, I can get rhythmically, I can sort of vary what I'm playing a little bit.
I like the offbeat. I like the offbeat sort of more syncopated.
So. Yeah, and you know, and you don't have to play everything in such an ascending.
Or directional.
You know, it doesn't have to be so up and down. It can be, you know. You know, I mean, something like
that. And that's also, this is very mental. This is just sort of the start connecting ideas.
Right. And that's, like, I'll always have people start like that. And it's a challenging exercise because, you know, it doesn't sound, you don't have this, you don't have a million note options all over the neck, you know, to play with. You're hemming yourself in and limiting yourself and having to do a lot with those notes. So, you know, it's like, okay, well, there's my notes. Okay, there's all the notes I have. So you have to start thinking rhythmically at this point on how to make those notes sound interesting and how to make them sound compelling.
Now I've never tried. Can I, as a yeah. So if I were taking this, so if I was playing an A7 chord, yeah. Right, and then I would probably be, let's see. See, for me, I'm immediately thinking, and it's not natural for me to go that way. I would be thinking more like a... See, I immediately go to the wrong string.
Yeah.
This is actually too restricted to me.
I'm trying to consciously keep myself within the boundaries of three strings only, one position, so I'm not even reaching up to the high C sharp.
Right.
That's outside of the position.
That's funny, because my first reaction is I want to make a melody. Jamie, let me just go...
Nope, too many notes. Too many notes.
Too many notes.
Yeah, too wheedly.
Wait, but that's like, and that's, and my answer is like Mozart's answer, which was, which ones would you like me to remove? And the obvious answer is obviously the G sharp.
I like that one.
Oh, you like that one?
But again, it's like, you know, Ted Green did a lot of this kind of stuff too, where he would like, you know, his thing was like, sometimes you have to put up boundaries for yourself to work. You have to put up parameters for yourself to work within.
See, and this note is important to me. Like this.
Me too. You know. I mean, I love all the ninth stuff, but, you know, just as an exercise in how do I take a little and make it interesting, you know, you have to start thinking rhythmically. And to me, that's kind of the heart of where... The art of phrasing is sort of like it all lies in how it's in its rhythmic rhythmic things and not so much melodic things.
Yeah, I mean for me it's great, I'm actually have to start practicing it because for me, from like a thinking point of view, I'm immediately going, it's really interesting. The most common thing the guys reach for is playing A chord or the rock thing. And if I tend to reach for alternate keys, but if I'm playing this, my ear just immediately wants to make a little story. You know, that's a little story for me, but I can't think in those. I mean, that's here. I'm going to hand it back to you. I really like this idea of, I mean, thinking in terms of really restricting yourself. There was a guy, Mick Goodrick, in New England Conservatory I studied with, and he said to me that the greatest freedom occurs when the most rules are constricting you and you're still able to do exactly what you want to do.
Right.
You know, now just for the fun of it, just if you were given an A7 chord and just told to go, what would you play that would just be something that would be something you would hear as a storyline? Not restricted, but just as a melodic phrasing line.
Same kind of groove.
Same kind of groove, yeah. But there's a story that's evolving. It's a really clear, evolving story. So here we keep playing. We'll play out. I'll let you play us out. So here we are at the end of another episode of Guitar Talk, where we've actually not only gone to Guitar Talk, but we've gone to guitar play. We've made a leap into the next stage, and Jamie's playing D sharps against A7, which I really like, and G triads, and chromatic motion, and diminished chords, and whole tone. I can just call it. I feel like I'm a baseball caller. Jamie at the plate rolls out whole tone scale. Now Lydian flat 7. Chromatic motion. Chromatic whole tone motion against the plate. And he's warming up now. Looks like he's got the signal from the umpire. No, I'm sorry, the signal from the catcher. Is he gonna walk him? Man on first. Interval, slide, greasy stuff. Minor second intervals. blues scale against that A7. Yeah, that's the way it's going. All right, another great episode of Guitar Talk with John and Jamie. Do us a favor, talk to us about phrasing, leave messages, leave comments. Go out to the iTunes site and leave reviews and thoughts about the show. We will actually listen to your suggestions and at some point be actually doing a live version where you can call in and ask us questions. But in the meantime, you know, watch him double time his stuff while he's keeping tempo. So he's been playing eighth notes, and now he's going to be playing 16th notes with superimposed triads over the A bass. It's really great. That's cool. Would you call this like guitar umpiring? No, guitar color commentary.
Right, you're the color man.
I'm the color commentary man on the guitar. All right, John and Jamie, Guitar Talk, all things guitar. Keep playing this out. But you got to talk while you're playing this out.
I can't talk while.
If you talk while playing out, then we've now broken too many rules for our show. Big-ass wide finger chords there, too, just for you guys. All right. Do you want to fade? Is that what you want?
I'll leave that to you in post.
Okay, 7, baby.
But I played some sloppy-ass shit on it.
That's all right. It's still good. It makes sense. Thank you.